Today I wanted to start out by giving you each a sheet of paper. And I think you'll have enough, but if I get to the back and you don't have one.
Yeah.
One to each. There's more paper if you need it. Okay, what I want you to do is first just listen. You need to have a piece of paper and something that you can write with or make marks with. No, he's in the village.
Oh.
Okay. Well, you're not going to be doing that.
Another one here.
Cheers. Okay, what I'd like you to do is to look at that piece of paper, to look at that blank sheet of paper, and think about what you would do with this paper, on this paper, to this paper, that would be somehow an expression of yourself and your life, somehow extending yourself beyond where you are now. And I want you to not do anything right away. I want you to just do that. And I'm going to give you just a minute or so to just think. And what I want you to do is to look at it. I don't want you just like this. I want you to look at the blank sheet of paper. About what I want you to think about. Okay, I want you to think about yourself in relationship to that paper, what you would do on, to, or with that paper that would somehow be an expression of yourself, your life, your edges.
Right now, I thought I heard you say, or what you want to be.
Well, or future, anything that go with it the way you want to go with it. Okay. Now, this is a trick. You don't have to write anything. If you thought of something you want to do, fine, after class, go ahead and do it. I think that's great. But what I want you to do now is to verbalize, or try to just speak out, what were your feelings when I asked you to do that? Panic. Panic, fear,
reluctance.
Pardon?
Reluctance.
Reluctance.
Confusion.
Tear it in pieces and just share it.
Anticipation.
Threatened.
I can't do
that. I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Okay.
Confusion.
Anticipation. I'm doing these quickly. I hope I'm doing this. Spelling them right.
I'm not good at this.
Oh, I've got two anticipations. I'm not good at this. I can't.
Right.
I'm in the wrong place.
No, that's because I didn't engage in the above.
No pen.
No pen. Okay. What about
say.
Okay. Anything else? That's it. I expected panic, fear, reluctance. I mean, it's amazing because you said almost all of the ones I expected. I'm glad to hear that there were quite a few who said fun, anticipation too. But it is funny because it's not funny. That's the wrong use of the word. We are a verbal society. We talk, we write. We do not look at a blank sheet of paper and feel at ease with it. It's usually to do something or be in process with something. It's to take notes, to help your memory. But rarely in our society do we use paper to look at as an extension of ourselves, as an extension of our mind, as an extension of where we see ourselves. So that is why I gave this to you, sort of as, well, a little visual lesson, I guess. But this week I wanted to talk about creativity and chaos, and starting off with boredom and dis-ease. And the reason I'm starting off with boredom and dis-ease is because probably in some ways boredom is the worst enemy to creativity, and yet it's essential. So it's a very difficult concept to get around. The second session is learning to see, and that isn't just learning to see visually, although we'll do some of that too, but learning to see as a concept of how we touch the world around us, how we touch other people, how we relate to our own lives. And then the third session, prophet as artist, artist as prophet, doing some kind of relational things about the lifestyle of an artist and a prophet. And then the fourth, I think, is the most difficult. It's my husband said that this title, you won't get anyone to come to this, but it's imaging the unnameable. And that is probably going to be working more on how the symbols we've chosen sometimes can enlarge our vision, but more often than not, confine our vision. And we get to say that this symbol is it, rather than a funnel through which we can see more. And then the last one is living a creator-full life. So I probably should just give you a little introduction about me so you know who's doing all this talking. I am a practicing artist who has done a lot of not arting. I mean, I spend a lot of time making excuses. I spend a lot of time saying I can't do it. And right now, I used to teach art, and I said, no, now I want to see whether I can do this full time. Have found out that, in fact, it's probably too intense an occupation for me to do full time. I need other things in my life. So I got a master's in theology from Hammer School of Theology in Ohio. I have a BA in art from California Lutheran College, and then I have a PhD from Union Graduate School in art and theology. And the reason I did this is part of me was this person who expressed in fits and starts and in juxtapositions, and part of me was this person who really loved logical things, linear things that really fit. I love to put puzzles together and things. So it was trying to say, bring these parts of myself together, in realizing that in the degree I was trying to do a lifetime's worth of work, and so I'm still working on that. Also the reason that I wanted you to do this is I don't think you realize this, but every time an artist, I don't care if the person is Picasso, Georgia O'Keeffe, you, anyone, this is what you go through in one form or another, at some time or another, while you're doing your work, before you do your work, after you do your work. It is part of what it means to me to be human, to be in the image of God. It's part of extending ourselves beyond what is easy. Now, See, is that enough introduction? I think so. Okay. Now, why is it, why is the right word? Why is it some people create and others don't? I don't know the answer to that.
Some people are forced to create. It's their job.
Okay. Some people create partially, I think, because they don't really want to, but it's coming out of them. And I personally feel that every person that's alive has the ability to create in one way or another, but is afraid of the process, is afraid of the unknown. Let's say, okay. In our society right now, we are a very visual society, more so than before because of TV and video games and so on and so forth. But are we creating with these, or are we using parts of our lives as, should I say, not wanting to handle our life? Keeping so busy having fun, keeping so active.
Oh,
yeah, it's, in one sense, it's a bad term, use of creation, because in some senses, what we are doing is before we know ourselves, we are filling our time so that when we come to the end of the day, or we come to a time when we pause, we feel bored. Now, why do we feel bored? I feel bored. I have some poems here that I've written at different times. I'm very good at talking about boredom. But here's one, for instance. There are different kinds of boredom. There's the kind of boredom where you can be in a lecture and it's boring and you can just get out. That's sort of a situational boredom. You can actively leave, you know. And if you, some of you want to, that's all right, because like that just means you're not here right now. The other part is a boredom that sort of starts to well up inside, and you start to say, I don't like my job, I don't like what I'm doing, I'm not really interested in anything, what's the matter with me? And so one of the things we often do is quick, like, one of the things I do if I get to that place is I might go buy something new, like a new blouse or something, or I'll watch TV, or I fill the time.
Go eat.
Yeah, okay, right. Eating is perfect. Okay. I just want to read about three or four of these. Sitting alone in quiet, the day seeps in to this hour. I have been busy and yet not here until now. I have used the day well, I could say, but sitting alone in quiet begins to bring today closer to myself. Now that is a very difficult place to be, because what you have to do is not be afraid of being bored. And I think what when we are in boredom, we have basically lost a lot of our feelings, but we're so afraid of being bored when we see it seeping in. I'm saying we, because I'm assuming that a lot of you have had some variety of what I'm talking about. When we feel it seeping and say, oh, okay, let's go do this. What I'm trying to say is that maybe boredom is a symbol to us. It's God, it's us, it's something within ourselves that is saying, hey, listen, stop what you're doing and find out what it is you're either boxing yourself into, with a lot of shoulds, I can't, I won't, I haven't time, what it is you might be afraid of, what it is you may have learned sometime that you have to do. I mean, think back to being a kid and you gotta do this, gotta do that, gotta do this. And one of the things we do is we often use our faith as walls rather than as openers. And without really searching that and questioning that point, we never get beyond the walls, and we just remain bored. Okay, here. This one. It seems once I slow down, I stop. As if the impetus to go were not innate, but imposed. The soup has not begun to boil, yet I return again to push it around and around with my long-handled spoon. Pointlessness is discovering the repetition of days and knowing nothing else. And sagging elbows bend over the table, edges, bones dissolve. I become a puddle with one long appendage, holding a pen, writing, writing. And see, I really get into this. when I wrote these, it wasn't humorous, but okay. The lush slush of my bones seeps into my energy and hardens. Yesterday's sleep, drugged movement, slowed too deep to move. I slept into today. Awakening, life continued. One beat behind, dragging to a close. Another one. Watering the lawn, futility in a desert. Washing the clothes, futility in a family. Vacuuming the dust, futility in an old house. Washing the dishes, futility if one eats. Yet I do them all, I do them all. And then, who knows, who cares, who wants, who thinks, who wills. Hollow bean bag balloons move through silent mazes, each one finding its niche, its place, its time. She felt as one bouncing around already full niches. She bounced less and less, searched less and less, then fell into the silent mazes between. Becoming one with nothing, she snuggled into oblivion. And I think I got one more here. I'm tired of doing things for other people. What I want comes last. If what I want comes sooner, the system breaks down. Dishes pile up, dust balls blow, clothes spill out onto the floor, grass dries out, flowers wilt. The surrounding space encounters itself over my head, crashing into itself between my ears, piercing my gut as its pieces drop on my toes and bury me solid and hard into now. Okay, I'm sure all of you have felt some of those feelings at one time or another.
I'm not sure too, when you say creep, boredom comes out of limitations and that stifles creativity. I guess I've seen in my life and in other people's lives that limitations are the things that bring out creativity.
Okay, good point.
That a musician will choose. He will choose certain limitations and say, I will stick with this form, or I will write this kind of verse. And it's a self-imposed limitation. The preacher on Sunday doesn't take a look and say, what theme out of all of the themes in the world will I choose to preach about this Sunday? The self-imposed limitations of the texts for that Sunday seems to infuse a certain kind of...
You're talking about a different kind of limitation. I am not denying the importance of limitations. Limitations are important if they are consciously chosen as part of what you are attempting to grow into or grow with. I'm talking about limitations that we often don't even know we have in us, that we are told are limitations, that really may not be limitations. It's like so many people feeling, I can't. You know, it's like taking the piece of paper and saying, I'm not good at this. I can't do this. I don't know. I can't speak in front of a group. I couldn't paint. I don't know anything about music. You know, it's that feeling I'm talking about where we have self-imposed limitations. Limitations are important. I'm trying to say there are different kinds. Does that help?
Might you be talking about a limitation that maybe comes from our lifestyle? Like, partly what I've been thinking about the boredom is that one of the ways I deal with it, and that we have uniquely as Americans to deal with it, is to consume. And I'm thinking about, we just recently got a VCR maybe 6 months ago. So, you know, a new form to consume. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, in the last 6 months, we've seen more movies than I probably have seen in my whole life. And we've had friends, you know, like there's been other friends, and so it's sort of like it's a societal consumption. And then all of a sudden, the boredom starts to set in about the movies and the activity of consumption. And
that's one thing. One of the things
and
that
I don't know, maybe that's more.
Boredom is a difficult word because it means many things. I read in this one book, and I didn't know what their source was, but it sounds real to me. They said, Sam Keen is the person who said this. Boredom is a word of the last century. Prior to the last century, or should we say the technological revolution, people had black bile or melancholy. They didn't have boredom. Boredom actually comes from bore. When the tool, the mechanical tool, goes round and round and drills in, boredom has become a part of our life, possibly because of the technological revolution.
But I think that there's a link with freedom, boredom and freedom that goes.
Right.
My children are the most bored when they have
freedom
in the summertime. And then if my son has been bad and I shut him in his room and say, you have to stay in your room, then he will become creative. But
okay, wait a second. Now, just wait a second.
Whole house to play in.
All right. There is,
not bored.
And I said this at the beginning too, it is not the boredom that is necessarily so bad. One must go through boredom to know themselves and to be creative. It is the fear of boredom that is the death. So consequently, is the boredom that is really the death and the problems of creativity. Because if we're so afraid of boredom that we get busy, and we don't know what our own inner resources are, if we put up limits and say nope, and start running, then in fact, we haven't even gotten to the place where we're choosing our own limits. We haven't even gone through the boredom to find out what we're bored about. We can't even find out what is inside us, especially us, ourselves specifically, that will come out. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay.
Well, you know, I see this as, you know, the fear of going inside of myself, the fear, you know, what I don't know inside of me. That's why, you know, that's one reason why I don't want to allow myself the time to.
Right.
You
and
know,
this is where the chaos comes, creativity and chaos, because it's a weird juxtaposition, but chaos and boredom are very closely related. When you look at, well, in what sense, the sheet of paper. The sheet of paper is just a blank piece of paper. But in one sense, I'm coming, it was such chaotic. I don't know where I am. I don't know anything. It's just like, this is too chaotic for me. I don't want to handle it. So then there's the chaos of the world around us. And it's like saying, hey, I don't want pain. I don't want to have to worry. I don't want to have to handle something I can't handle and know I can't handle it. All these things relate to the chaos of the world. And at the same time, we're feeling bored. It's a very, as we cut off our fears and our joys, we're cutting off the edges that are essential to life. You can't have joy unless you have pain. I really believe that. When we cut off a part that says, I can't be angry, I'm really angry, but I can't be angry, it's not right, we have cut off, we have voluntarily cut off our joys. We have voluntarily cut off our love. And so we slowly box ourselves into, I can't do this, and therefore I can't do this. I can't believe this, or I can't. And that part of being afraid of the chaos around us is, and it's also afraid of chaos within ourselves. And that is the place where I feel God speaks to you. God doesn't speak to me as loudly through a written page as I think God speaks within our own life. We are created in the image of God. What does that mean? God is a creator God. That means he worked with chaos, and it wasn't troubling. He rested. And I shouldn't even be saying he, because I don't like that. That's another thing. But
I think you were doing fine.
So anyway, I think what we do, we start it in our children. And because it's difficult to live with children, I've done this to my son too, that there are so many excitements, like, you know, when he's excited, it's run fast, you know, or when he's depressed, he's rolling his breath. And it, the extremes and the feelings and, oh, I love you, and oh, I hate you, and all these things are like, oh, tone it down, you know, you've got to fit in society, you've got to fit with your friends, there are certain things you have to, and we start to do this, and we've had this done to us too. And I think the thing that is very exciting about the artist in our society is, to me, is that there are people who are consciously working with bringing out the rough edges again. And the way, I mean, it's hard to live with artists, I think, in our society. They don't fit. You know, there are a lot of musicians, actors, people even at work who are very creative. They're really hard to live with because we want them to be easier, you know, fit. And we don't fit. We're all very, very different. And that part, the celebration of God in each one of us, I think requires us to learn to live with our own private chaos in order to feel at ease in the chaos in the world around us. And that's what's really hard. So creativity to me is possible in every person's life, but I have no idea what your creativity would be. And it is not only music and art and drama. Creativity is how we live in the world with ourselves. And that is, I think, part of the call that God is saying when he's when God talks about in the image of God. And we're very afraid. And to me, it's almost sinful. See, I've got this continuum that the harder a person works at knowing who they are, this is hard to say because it's different, I think, from what a lot of other people think. And knowing who they are, the closer they are to God, the harder a person works to learn what someone else tells them God is, maybe the further they are from God. And the more distant you are from yourself, the more distant you are from others and from God. And that's very difficult because we want our belief to tell us how to be. And what the belief is saying, hey, no, what it means is you need to discover God speaking in yourself. So I want to get it question time here. I have a couple other things I want to my watch is very small. Okay. Now the thing that I don't know your name in the green shirt.
Marty.
Okay. As I thought about this session, these five sessions this week, I had a difficult time with limits, boredom, and chaos. And I was trying to think about how I wanted to present it, because when I'm working on a painting, I choose a certain medium. I used to paint on canvas, and I decided the canvas surface was too limiting. So I took the canvas off the stretcher bar, and I dropped the cloth on the floor. And all of a sudden, it was this fantastic breakthrough. I didn't need that limit. I mean, I don't need a stretcher bar. But I was so frustrated and bored with what I was doing because the limitation that I had chosen, I think I grew beyond. And that's a very difficult thing, to know when you're ready to grow beyond where you are. Because it's so relaxing to finally feel a breakthrough and say, wow, I feel so good and so centered. But I don't feel God is calling us to stay still. I mean, your life is a whole constant move. So I dropped the canvas on the floor, changed it to other fabrics, then started to work with paint. And I think it's really hard to not ever grow up. I think it's hard to realize that there's not a place where it's easy, and there's not a place where you can stop and rest, in a sense. There's not a place while you're alive that you can say, I'm here, for very long. I mean, we could say that, but to continue to create, like, I think of someone like George O'Keefe, Pablo Picasso, people know, wow, they're 90 years old and they're still working. That's part of being human. When we stop is when we stop being human. But it's exciting because there are people who do that. Some of the people who come back here to Holden have worked a lot and keep working here. They're that kind of creative person. They just keep going. And they're so alive and so excited. But I want to stop. I want to say, I've made it. I'm an adult. You know, I've got my life together. I'm earning the right amount of money. I'm in a certain status. I'm, you know, and realize it starts to get bored after a while. And I believe that that is the boredom I'm talking about, that we can work on and find why career changes happen in the middle of life, why someone does something, you know, at 60 that they never thought they could do at 20, because they've grown. That's what life is about. Cyclical, continuing on, and always being aware that the peace of feeling very secure in where you are is comfortable, but can also be your enemy, because security can work against this continual call. So, I don't know if any of this is, you know, what's clicking in or anything. So boredom can be lonely. It can be a symptom of crisis values. It can be essential. It can be constipation of the imagination. It can be a womb. It can't, something that you choose. I mean, boredom is often a womb.
Ah. Alternative to failure.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Yes, alternative to failure. It's much better to be bored than to have tried and not.
I'm not sure that's true.
No, but I think that's what we do. I know I do it.
Yeah, I was working on a big project. That's the reason I'm a cold, is one of the reasons. I was working on a big computer project on my own. And, it involved, you know, like 19-year locking programs and all this data, and I've never done anything like that before, but I knew it was possible. Get into it, you know, all the time. I'm not going to complete it. I'm not going to complete it.
Yeah.
And I find myself doing little things, you know, little side things that aren't essential in order to avoid hitting it and doing it. And those things were boring, but they were an alternative to fail.
Yeah. It's not stupid, it's sort of a defense mechanism.
Oh, it is.
You know, it's,
but you have to see it. You have to see it and understand it, because there are still people.
Right.
Nobody out there not doing
right.
anything.
And the thing that we do, which I do, I'm including myself, I would prefer sitting down and watching Magnum on Thursday night than sitting there and saying, what is really bothering me? You know, or why is this bothering me?
Yeah.
And the thing that it seems to be that we're so afraid of doing is thinking, if we think of this and feel this, maybe I'll be trapped in that feeling forever. Or, I mean, what are we really afraid of? I mean, I've lived 40 years. I have been in the deepest depression. And I've been at such a joy that I can't even say anything. And I've lived through it. You know, I've come out the other side. It's part of what God's given us, is this ability. I feel it's part of the image of God that's in us, is we can continue on. And that, so what am I afraid of? And it's just that, it's, I don't want to fail. You yeah. know, I don't want to feel the pain again.
That's totally logical, because you say to yourself, I might fail. Well, that goes without saying. You get up in the morning, you might fall on your nose and break your, yeah. and break your neck. I mean, you know, you can't not get out of bed for fear of falling on your nose and breaking your neck. You can always fail.
Failure may not be a bad thing.
No, for one thing, it defines your own limits. It may define your own limits. Or it may give you
Or and it may be one of the best learning processes that you could be going through.
Mm-hmm.
Mistakes are what
that's right.
Often you learn from your mistakes and move on.
Another thing you said, chaos. I'm in this setting, I'm reminded of something Carl Sagan said in his book that went along with Cosmos,
mm-hmm.
the Cosmos series on television. I don't know what he said in these series or not. But he said there were two words in the Greek, so chaos and cosmos. They were opposite each other. And it's very much like what we see in Genesis. In the beginning, there was this void. This chaotic void, and then God created the cosmos in order.
Mm-hmm.
And so all creation starts with that mess, that soup, and it's also in each one of us, too.
I mean, it's a mess. It's a soup. It's,
yeah.
you know, picking out a carrot, but it looks...
And so you organize it in a sense, and that's where the limits come in. You draw the line. You draw the box.
And that's the part that becomes difficult, because then we start to say, this limit is firm for the rest of my life. You know?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
we take, and we've created limits.
Yeah.
Okay, one of the things that... I was in a co-op gallery a while back, and there was this one woman in there, and she was very good at what she did. She also, at the same time, I mean, at that time, she was very good at how she handled the paint. At the same time, she started to sell. Now, starting to sell as a struggling artist is a very difficult place to be, because number one, you say, hell, I'll do it again and again. And a year later, she was doing the same thing, exactly. The group of people who bought her in the San Jose area had bought her. She was beginning to feel bored. She didn't know why her paintings weren't selling. She had put up a limit because I'm selling. You know, what had brought her to that point, she didn't continue, you see, because this was security. Something that she'd wanted, and then all of a sudden she got it, but she didn't continue to grow, you know, in her craft. And it's a very difficult thing to realize, hey, I can grow beyond a goal I had before.
You know, John, and really going back to your computer thing, I weave tapestries.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found in myself, coming out of my subconscious, was that I really didn't want to let go of one thing. I would deliberately not complete it until I had another definite project in mind.
yeah.
I didn't want to get that place where I had to come up with something again, you know.
One of my art teachers in college, you get to a place when you're doing something, especially I do, and I suppose other people who work on visual things too, where some part of that painting you just love. It came together so well.
Yeah.
The colors just hit. It's just so perfect. But you can't get the rest of the painting to the same level. And he said, maybe that has to go. And then he said, if it's supposed to be there and if it's really you, it'll come back. It's that leap, I think, that is very difficult to do. And the only way to get the whole picture of your life together is often to let something go. There's that I don't want to let go. But like you're saying, hanging on to that.
Yeah.
And we don't want to have this Somebody comes up to you and says, what do? You don't want to say, I don't know. Or they say, what's your job? You're saying, well, I'm between jobs. What are the things that we don't like as adults? You know, these are the things we know. When you're a kid, you can say, well, I'm going to be this. I don't know what I mean. When you're adult, all of a sudden, there's things you're supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to have your life together. You're supposed to possibly be buying a home if you can, maybe have a family if you can. Be good in your job. Know that you're going to go to the next. I mean, all these things that we have as our shoulds that I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying sometimes we use these as our barriers to grow beyond.
And Janet, you don't go to a class reunion until you can answer all those.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's so true. Okay, so that. Oh, this is a quote here. Our deep inner resources are not enriched by the confines which we place on them, but by the freedoms we allow. Now,
I don't know. You know what I found to be one of the most inspiring quotations that from my work?
Here, sure, it's
from Star Wars. Quotation of Yoda, the Jedi Master. There's no such thing as trying, Luke. There's only doing.
Yeah. Some great stuff in
Star Wars. You know, I stuck that up on my wall, and every time I got bored, I looked at it. Because what I was doing was I wasn't doing. I was trying, or I was thinking, or I was keeping myself busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
somehow what you said there, I don't know. I think doing is the key. You gotta do it. You gotta force yourself to do it. Mm-hmm. And
I think you're saying pretty much the same thing, only you're maybe saying it more clearly.
And I don't know which deep inner resources he's talking about, but that's what I get. In other words, you look at something, you say it's impossible. Okay, so it's impossible. Let's do it. Look at that mine over there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That thing is huge. That thing was, the guy who started that probably had
no
probably knew that a mine that size was impossible when he started. And it was done. And it wasn't done by him. It was done by how many hundred people?
Yes, right.
But when we were talking about limits before, I was thinking that if I don't allow myself to get bored and work enough with my own limits so that I realize that I'm choosing them on certain larger issues, like hunger in South Africa, certain things, I accept that those are impossible to deal with because they're too big. And I don't even then have the energy to start tackling those so that I can find a way to have an answer to something that seems impossibly complicated. But the reason it's so impossible to deal with is because I maybe decide, along with a lot of other people, that it's impossible.
But the beauty of that quotation is, he says, there's no such thing as trying, there's only doing. Impossible to solve the problem in South Africa. Maybe South Africa is going to dry up and blow away. That's not for me to decide. If that happens, that's God's doing. But there's no such thing as trying to solve the problem. We can only go in and give it our best and do it. And it's the same thing with that piece of paper. That's why I wasn't afraid of it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I think, Kathy, some of the things have been said here, that boredom is not a bad thing that we need to be afraid of, say, I'm bored, but we need to go a step beyond it and with it. I believe that silence and listening to yourself is involved in trust and faith. And that when we don't do that, we really haven't got to trust that God is with us. We don't believe that there's an active spirit. We really don't believe that, just that God's with us and that we are in the image of God. I think it's part of our unbelief to not live with ourselves in silence. And I'm trying to because I am an artist, I'm trying to understand the processes I go through in relationship to what I believe, and not have my belief be confining to my creativity, and not having my creativity not fit with my belief. So that is a very difficult place to be, because what you're saying is, I'm trusting. And I can't do that constantly. And part of the reason why I wanted to do this five-part series is because a lot of these things we're talking about limits and boredom, and I do a lot of these things non-verbally. I mean, when you're painting, you don't think, now I'm going to do this. I mean, you just do it. Or like you look at the painting and saying, it's not right. David will walk in and say, looks fine to me, and it's not right. And keeping on with that going has not been verbalized in me. So this week, I'm also struggling with how do we put words on the creative process. It's been done, I mean, many artists, writers, I mean, there's books, there's collections of books, of writings, and so on. It's a difficult thing to handle. And I think that's part of its excitement, because we can't box it. I mean, the concept of creativity itself can't be boxed. We can only get glimmers, little lights. This is one book that's in the bookstore over there, which many of you maybe already know. Rollo May, The Courage to Create. Well, I've just had this for a long time, and I've reread it many times. But as far as thinking about yourself as a creative person, this is a good book if you're interested. Also, Annie Dillard has 3 or 4 books out, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. They have Holy the Firm there, but it's by another person, and also Teaching a Stone to Talk. Any of her books are good, I think, because of what she is struggling with in her life. You could just pick them up and look at them and see what you think. But some of the things that I've talked to some people about her and say, I can't stand her. I mean, she talks about things like frogs being sucked out by, I mean, she's a science watcher. Frogs being sucked out by some creature below, and she gets really into what she sees, and then talks about it in relationship to what she believes. And to me, she's fascinating because she's always doing this. Here's a quote, for instance: how can people think that artists seek a name? A name like a face is something you have when you're not alone. There is no such thing as an artist. There is only the world, lit or unlit as the light allows. When the candle is burning, who looks at the wick? When the candle is out, who needs it? But the world without light is wasteland and chaos, and a life without sacrifice is an abomination. So she's just a thinking person trying to live her life and trying to express what it means to be alive. So I really enjoy her. Another person is Mae Sarton. There's some over there, and then Sam Keith. There are people who are struggling, I think, with these same things. And I think we can learn from them.
There's a couple things that come to mind talking about this. One is not necessarily dealing with limits and boredom, but with the discipline of doing it. The discipline of doing it is sometimes the hardest part of it, because I know in my own self, I'm a freelance writer, I have a family, but I also have assignments, and to get to that blank sheet of paper, that's when I start making the excuses that, gee, I should put another load of laundry on, or I should be,
yeah. Yes, laundry's great that way,
yeah,
you can
see the fingerprints that you haven't seen for months.
Yes.
But it's the kind of thing, the discipline of getting there and saying, this segment of time I'm going to do, and not let anything else disturb. Now, the limits within that will have to be set, but it's that discipline of doing. The other thing I think is, in our Western culture, we have a tendency, part of our fear comes from the linear time thinking that we have, that we fear that if we blow it this time, we'll never have another chance to do it again. And I've done a lot of work with Native people who work with the circular time, and they're much more at ease
with dealing with, if it doesn't work out, it'll come back again, you'll have that intent. And we get so hung up on, if we don't get it right this time, that's going to be the end of it, because we're moving along
the line. That's part of the, I think, some of the limits in the boredom, because we said, this is the way it has to be. It has to be now, you know, where we can learn a lot from other people and how they image. Well, that's partly the fourth question. That's true. The discipline is very hard. I have three more things I wanted to read here, and then we can still continue on. But let's try this. Wandering amongst myself, I smile at the humorous, I twinkle at the clever, I wonder at the unknown, I am pleased with my harvest of the known. Wandering amongst myself, I appreciate the work to come through autumn with extra days to spare. I appreciate the time to come through winter and find spring still there. I appreciate my space to come through spring and relax into the warmth of summer. Wandering amongst myself, my edges dissolve into themselves and become paths to newness. And I want someone to answer prayer. I want someone to have gifts for the hungry. I want someone to have a master plan. I want the good to outwit the bad. I want to turn into a path uncluttered. I want someone to give me answers, to help. We flounder along creating myths to answer our wants. We latch onto answers before our questions are clear. I keep thinking beyond the question of today, trying not to answer tomorrow with yesterday only, wrenching out of myself newness. And then there's one more. This is Teilhard de Chardin. Thus, every person, and I changed the him to her because for me. Thus, every person in the course of her life, by her fidelity, she must build, starting with the most natural territory of her own self, a work, an opus, into which something enters from all the elements of the earth. She makes her own soul throughout her earthly days, and at the same time, she collaborates in another work, in another opus, which infinitely transcends, while at the same time it narrowly determines the perspectives of her individual achievement, the completing of the world. And then, that's all I have to say to you, but I'm here. If you have any more you want to talk or ask or contrast with.
I cut this out a long time ago, made a copy from Newsweek, January 2nd, 1984, and I really have never talked to anybody, or very rarely, but I thought when we're talking about growing through the pain, this article was in the science section. I thought was really neat because it said that scientists are starting to believe that stressful environments may be producing the major changes in the history of life, scientifically, biologically. Dramatic leaps up the evolutionary ladder have come through stressful physical environments. Now, isn't that interesting? Let's see. Well, they talked about, giving some examples of where that had happened. The most stressful environment was where the changes took place. And let's see, one of the explanations holds that stressful environments indeed spawn more biological innovation because communities there are small and isolated. Under such conditions, genetic changes, the raw materials of evolution, sweep through like brush fire. And then anthropologists believe that our ancestors became fully human only after they left their secure life in the trees for the harsh world of the savannah. Is that me?
Well, what the artist, or the prophet, or what I believe Christianity is calling us to say, is don't be afraid of it.
Right. Exactly.
And it's our fear of it, or our joining the stream before we know where we're there and just going, boom. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And that saying, no, you know, let's keep this a little softer. But it can be so exciting.
Yes.
Especially when we feel centered in ourselves.
I was going to say that some of that puts that together for me. Instead of being afraid of the limitation, to embrace the limitation.
Okay, very well put.
You know, the way Bonhoeffer embraced the limitations and then became more creative when he was in prison than he had been outside of prison. The way Francis of Assisi embraced limitations in his life and became still more creative.
It's going through it, yeah. Going with it, not being afraid of what they are, but that's also really scrutinizing what they are. You know, oh, there's... I don't know if any of you have read John Gardner in his great novel. I love it. Maybe, I don't know if I can find it now. I didn't mark it. But he, in October Light, he has this very old man who is in Vermont, and it's his struggle with life. But he's talking about in his specific case, his guilt that he lived with, that he was weighted down with. And just, well... It's a long novel, so he said, and it says, and he looked at his guilt, and there was nothing there. You know, it's part of that really looking at what is there.
Mm-hmm.
Embracing includes looking, but it also includes thinking about it.
We fear ghosts.
Pardon?
We fear ghosts. We fear things that aren't there. That, you know, that maybe but we're afraid to find out. And we're afraid of those things.
That's that trust and faith, I think.
Yeah.
And the more distant you are from yourself, the more distant you are from others and from God. And that's very difficult because we want our belief to tell us how to be. And what the belief is saying, hey, no, what it means is you need to discover God speaking in yourself. So, I want to get at the question time here. I have a couple other things I want to. My watch is very small. Okay, now the thing that I don't know your name in the green shirt.
Marty.
Okay. As I thought about this session, these five sessions this week. I had a difficult time with limits, boredom, and chaos. And I was trying to think about how I wanted to present it, because when I'm working on a painting, I choose a certain medium. I used to paint on canvas, and I decided the canvas surface was too limiting. So I took the canvas off the stretcher bars and I dropped the cloth on the floor. And all of a sudden it was this fantastic breakthrough. I didn't need that limit. I mean, I don't need a stretcher bar. But I was so frustrated and bored with what I was doing because the limitation that I had chosen, I think I grew beyond. And that's a very difficult thing, to know when you're ready to grow beyond where you are. Because it's so relaxing to finally feel a breakthrough and say, wow, I feel so good and so centered. But I don't feel God just calling us to stay still. I mean, your life is a whole constant move. So I dropped the canvas on the floor, changed it to other fabrics, then just started to work with paint. And I think it's really hard to not ever grow up. I think it's hard to realize that there's not a place where it's easy, and there's not a place where you can stop and rest, in a sense. There's not a place while you're alive that you can say, I'm here, for very long. I mean, we could say that. But to continue to create, like, I think of someone like Giorgio O'Keeffe, Pablo Picasso, people know, wow, they're 90 years old and they're still working. That's part of being human. When we stop is when we stop being human. But it's exciting because there are people who do that. Some of the people who come back here to Holden have worked a lot and keep working here. They're that kind of creative person. They just keep going, and they're so alive and so exciting. But I want to stop. I want to say, I've made it. I'm an adult, you know? I've got my life together. I'm earning the right amount of money. I'm in a certain status. I'm, you know, and realize I start to get bored after a while. And I believe that that is the boredom I'm talking about, that we can work on and find why career changes happen in the middle of life, why someone does something, you know, at 60 that they never thought they could do at 20. Because they've grown. That's what life is about. Cyclical, continuing on, and always being aware that the peace of feeling very secure in where you are is comfortable, but can also be your enemy. Because security can work against this continual call. So, I don't know if any of this is, you know, what's clicking in or anything. So boredom can be lonely. It can be a symptom of crisis values. It can be essential. It can be constipation of the imagination. It can be a womb. It can't, something that you choose. I mean, boredom is often a womb. Ah.
Alternative to failure.
Very good. Yes. Alternative to failure. It's much better to be bored than to have tried and not.
I'm not sure that's true.
No, but I think that's what we do. I know I do it.
Yeah, I was working on a big project. That's the reason I'm at Holden, one of the reasons. I was working on a big computer project on my own. Mm-hmm. And it involved, you know, like 19 interlocking programs and all this data. And I'd never done anything like that before, but I knew it was possible. Get into it, you know, all the time. I'm not going to complete this. I'm not going to complete this.
Yeah.
And I find myself doing little things, you know, little side things that aren't essential in order to avoid getting it and doing it. And those things were boring, but they were an alternative to fail, which is stupid.
It's not stupid, it's sort of a defense mechanism.
Oh, it is.
No, it's,
but you have to see it. You have to see it and understand it, because otherwise, it's silly.
Right.
And, yeah, not doing
right.
Anything.
And the thing that we do, which I do, I'm including myself, I would prefer sitting down and watching Magnum on Thursday night than sitting there and saying, mm-hmm. What is really bothering me? You know, or why is this bothering me?
Yeah.
And the thing that it seems to be that we're so afraid of doing is thinking, if we think of this and feel this, maybe I'll be trapped in that feeling forever. Or, I mean, what are we really afraid of? I mean, I've lived 40 years. I have been in the deepest depression. And I've been at such a joy that I can't even say anything. And I've lived through it. You know, I've come out the other side. It's part of what God's given us, is this ability. I feel it's part of the image of God that's in us, is we can continue on. And that, so what am I afraid of? And it's just that. It's, I don't want to fail. You know, I don't want to feel the pain again.
But that's so illogical, because you say to yourself, I might fail. Well, that goes without saying. You get up in the morning, you might fall on your nose and break your neck. I mean, you know, you can't not get out of bed for fear of falling on your nose and breaking your neck. You can always fail.
Failure may not be a bad thing.
No, for one thing, it defines your own limits. It may define your own limits. Or it may give you
or, and it may be one of the best learning processes that you could be going through.
Mm-hmm.
Mistakes are what...
That's right.
Often
you learn from your mistakes.
You learn from your mistakes and move on.
Another thing you say, chaos. I'm in this setting, I'm reminded of something Carl Sagan said in his book that went along with Cosmos, mm-hmm. the Cosmos series on television. I don't know what he said in the series or not. But he said there were two words in the Greek. There was chaos and cosmos. They were opposite each other. And it's very much like what we see in Genesis. In the beginning, there was this void, this chaotic void. And then God created a cosmos in order. Mm-hmm. And so all creation starts with that mess. that soup, that, that, and it didn't even, and it's,
and it's,
soup,
it's also in each one of us too. I mean, it is, it, it's a mess, it's a soup, it's,
yeah,
you know, picking out a carrot, but it looks, you know.
And so you organize it in a sense, and that's where the limits come in. You draw the lines, you draw the boxes.
And that's the part that becomes difficult, because then we start to say, ah, this limit is firm for the rest of my life, you know.
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
we take, and we've created limits.
Yeah.
Okay, one of the things that, I was in a co-op gallery, a while back, and there was this one woman in there, and she was very good at what she did. She also, at the same time, I mean, at that time, she was very good at how she handled the paint. At the same time, she started to sell. Now, starting to sell as a struggling artist is a very difficult place to be. Because number one, you say, it sells, I'll do it again, and again. And a year later, she was doing the same thing, exactly. The group of people who bought her in the San Jose area had bought her. She was beginning to feel bored. She didn't know why her paintings weren't selling. She had put up a limit because I'm selling. She, you know, what had brought her to that point, she didn't continue, you see, because this was a security, something that she'd wanted, and then all of a sudden she got it, but she didn't continue to grow, you know, in her craft. And it's a very difficult thing to realize, hey, I can grow beyond a goal I had before.
You know, Janet, then going back to your computer thing, I weave tapestry.
Mm-hmm.
And what I have found in myself, coming out of my subconscious, was that I really didn't want to let go of one thing. I would deliberately not complete it until I had another definite project in mind.
Yeah.
I didn't want to hit that place where I had to come up with something again, you know.
One of my art teachers in college, you know, you get to a place when you're doing something, especially I do, and I suppose other people who work on visual things do, where some part of that painting you just love. It came together so well.
Yeah.
The colors just hit. It's just so perfect. But you can't get the rest of the painting to the same level. And he said, maybe that has to go. And then he said, if it's supposed to be there, and if it's really you, it'll come back. It's that leap, I think, that is very difficult to do. And the only way to get the whole picture of your life together is often to let something go that I don't want to let go. But like you're saying, hanging on to that.
Yeah.
And we don't want to have this. Somebody comes up to you and says, what do you do? You don't want to say, I don't know. Or they say, what's your job? And saying, well, I'm between jobs. What are the things that we don't like as adults? You know, these are the things we don't. When you're a kid, you can say, well, I'm going to be this. I don't know what I mean. When you're adult, all of a sudden, there's things you're supposed to be. You know, you're supposed to have your life together. You're supposed to possibly be buying a home if you can. Maybe have a family if you can. Be good in your job. Know that you're going to go to the next. I mean, all these things that we have as our shoulds, that I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying sometimes we use these as our barriers to grow beyond.
And Janet, you don't go to a class reunion until you can answer all those.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's so true. Okay, so that, this is a quote here. Our deep inner resources are not enriched by the confines which we place on them, but by the freedoms we allow. Now,
I don't know. You know what I found to be one of the most inspiring quotations that for my work.
Here, be sure it gets on.
It's from Star Wars. Quotation of Yoda, the Jedi Master. There's no such thing as trying, Luke. There's only doing.
Yeah. Some great,
you know,
stuff in Star
I don't, I, there is. You know, I stuck that up on my wall, and every time I got bored, I looked at it. Because what I was doing was I wasn't doing. I was trying, or I was thinking, or I was keeping myself busy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
somehow what you said there, I don't know, I think doing is the teenager. You gotta do it. You gotta force yourself to do it. Mm-hmm. And
I think we're saying pretty much the same thing, only you're maybe saying it more clearly.
And I don't know which deep inner resources he's talking about, but that's what I get. In other words,
you
look at something, you say it's impossible. Okay, so it's impossible. Let's do it. Look at that mine over there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That thing is huge. That thing was, the guy who started that probably had
probably
knew that a mine that size was impossible when he started. And it was done. And it wasn't done by him. It was done by how many hundreds of people?
Yeah, right.
But when we were talking about limits before, I was thinking that if I don't allow myself to get bored and work enough with my own limits so that I realize that I'm choosing them on certain larger issues, like hunger in South Africa, certain things I accept that those are impossible to deal with because they're too big. And I don't even know, I don't even then have the energy to start tackling those so that I can find the way to have an answer to something that seems impossibly complicated. But the reason it's so impossible to deal with is because I maybe decide, along with a lot of other people, that it's impossible.
But the beauty of that quotation is, he says, there's no such thing as trying, there's only doing.
No, I'm a Star Wars fan, too.
It's impossible to solve the problem in South Africa. Maybe South Africa is going to dry up and blow away. That's not for me to decide. If that happens, that's God's doing. But there's no such thing as trying to solve the problem. Mm-hmm. We can only go in and give it our best and do it. And that and it's the same thing with that piece of paper. That's why I wasn't afraid of it.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I think capping some of the things that have been said here, that boredom is not a bad thing that we are need to be afraid of, saying I'm bored, but we need to go a step beyond it and with it. I think I just want to say that I believe that silence and listening to yourself is involved in trust and faith. And that when we don't do that, we really haven't got to trust that God is with us. We don't believe that there's an active spirit. We really don't believe that, just that God's with us and that we are in the image of God. I think it's part of our unbelief to not live with ourselves in silence. And I'm trying to, because I am an artist, I'm trying to understand the processes I go through in relationship to what I believe and not have my belief be confining to my creativity and not having my creativity not fit with my belief. So that is a very difficult place to be, because what you're saying is, I'm trusting. And I can't do that constantly. And part of the reason why I wanted to do this five-part series is because a lot of these things we're talking about limits and boredom, and I do a lot of these things non-verbally. I mean, when you're painting, you don't think, now I'm going to do this. I mean, you just do it. Or like you look at the painting and saying, it's not right. David will walk in and say, it looks fine to me. It's not done, it's not right. And keeping on with that going has not been verbalized in me. So this week, I'm also struggling with how do we put words on the creative process. It's been done, I mean, many artists, writers, I mean, there's books, there's collections of writings and so on. It's a difficult thing to handle. And I think that's part of its excitement, because we can't box it. I mean, the concept of creativity itself can't be boxed. We can only get glimmers, little lights. This is one book that's in the bookstore over there, which many of you maybe already know. Rollo May, The Courage to Create. I've just had this for a long time and I've reread it many times. But as far as thinking about yourself as a creative person, this is a good book if you're interested. Also, Annie Dillard has 3 or 4 books out, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek. They have Holy the Firm there, but it's by another person, and also Teaching a Stone to Talk. Any of her books are good, I think, because of what she is struggling with in her life. You could just pick them up and look at them and see what you think. But some of the things, I've talked to some people about her and say, oh, I can't stand her. I mean, she talks about things like frogs being sucked out by, I mean, she's a science watcher. Frogs being sucked out by some creature below and all that. She gets really into what she sees and then talks about it in relationship to what she believes. And to me, she's fascinating because she's always doing this. And, well, here's a quote, for instance. How can people think that artists seek a name? A name, like a face, is something you have when you're not alone. There is no such thing as an artist. There is only the world, lit or unlit as the light allows. When the candle is burning, who looks at the wick? When the candle is out, who needs it? But the world without light is wasteland and chaos, and a life without sacrifice is an abomination. So she's just a thinking person trying to live her life and trying to express what it means to be alive. So I really enjoy her. Another person is Mae Sarton. There's some over there, and then Sam Key. There are people who are struggling, I think, with these same things. And I think we can learn from them.
There's a couple things that come to mind talking about this. One is not necessarily dealing with limits and boredom, but with the discipline of doing. The discipline of doing is sometimes the hardest part of it, because I know in my own self, I'm a freelance writer. I have a family, but I also have assignments, and to get to that blank sheet of paper, that's when I start making the excuses that, gee, I should put another load of laundry on, or I should.
Yeah. It's laundry's great that way, because
yeah,
you can.
Yeah, it's always
there.
You see the fingerprints that you haven't seen for months.
Yeah.
But it's the kind of thing, the discipline of getting there and saying, this segment of time I'm going to do, and not let anything else disturb. Now, the limits within that will have to be set, but it's that discipline of doing. The other thing I think is, in our Western culture, we have a tendency, part of our fear comes from the linear time thinking that we have, that we fear that if we blow it this time, we'll never have another chance to do it again. And I've done a lot of work with Native people who work with a circular time, and they're much more at ease with dealing with, if it doesn't work out, it'll come back again, you'll have that chance. And we get so hung up on, if we don't get it right this time, that's going to be the end of it, because we're moving along.
That's part of the, I think, some of the limits in the boredom, because we've said, this is the way it has to be. It has to be now, you know, whereas we can learn a lot from other people's and how they image. Well, that's partly the fourth issue. That's true. The discipline is very hard. I have three more things I wanted to read here, and then we can still continue on, but... let's try this one. Wandering amongst myself, I smile at the humorous, I twinkle at the clever, I wonder at the unknown, I am pleased with my harvest of the known. Wandering amongst myself, I appreciate the work to come through autumn with extra days to spare. I appreciate the time to come through winter and find spring still there. I appreciate my space to come through spring and relax into the warmth of summer. Wandering amongst myself, my edges dissolve into themselves and become paths to newness. And I want someone to answer prayer. I want someone to have gifts for the hungry. I want someone to have a master plan. I want the good to outwit the bad. I want to turn into a path uncluttered. I want someone to give me answers, to help. We flounder along creating myths to answer our wants. We latch onto answers before our questions are clear. I keep thinking beyond the question of today. trying not to answer tomorrow with yesterday only. Wrenching out of myself newness. And then there's one more. This is Teilhard de Chardin. Thus every person, and I've changed the hymn to her because it's for me. Thus every person in the course of her life, by her fidelity she must build, starting with the most natural territory of her own self, a work, an opus, into which something enters from all the elements of the earth. She makes her own soul throughout her earthly days, and at the same time, she collaborates in another work, in another opus, which infinitely transcends, while at the same time it narrowly determines the perspectives of her individual achievement, the completing of the world. And then, that's all I have to say specifically, but I'm here. If you have any more you want to talk or ask or contrast with.
I have this. I cut this out a long time ago, made a copy from Newsweek, January 2nd, 1984, and I really have never talked to anybody, or very rarely, but I thought when we're talking about growing through the pain, this article was in the science section. I thought it was really neat because it said the scientists are starting to believe that stressful environments may be producing the major changes in the history of life, scientifically, biologically, dramatic leaps up the evolutionary ladder have come through stressful physical environments. Now, isn't that interesting? Let's see. Well, they talked about, giving some examples of where that had happened. The most stressful environment was where the changes took place. And let's see, one of the explanations holds that stressful environments indeed spawn more biological innovation because communities there are small and isolated. Under such conditions, genetic changes, the raw materials of evolution, sweep through like brush fire. And then anthropologists believe that our ancestors became fully human only after they left their secure life in the trees for the harsh world of the savannah. Is that me?
Well, what I believe Christianity is calling us to say is don't be afraid of this.
Right. Exactly.
And it's our fear of it or our joining the stream before we know where we're there and just going, boom. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
That's the problem. And that saying, no, let's keep this a little softer. But it can be so exciting.
Yeah.
Especially when we feel centered in ourselves.
I was going to say that some of that puts that together for me, instead of being afraid of the limitations, to embrace the limitations.
Okay, very well put.
The way Bonhoeffer embraced the limitations and then became more creative when he was in prison than he had been outside of prison. The way Francis of Assisi embraced limitations in his life and became still more creative.
It's going through it, yeah. Going with it. Not being afraid of what they are, but that's also really scrutinizing what they are. I don't know if any of you have read John Gardner in his, he's a great novelist. I love him. I don't know if I can find it now, I didn't mark it. But in October Light, he has this very old man who is in Vermont, and it's his struggle with life. But he's talking about in his specific case, his guilt that he lived with, that he was weighted down with. And it's a long novel, so. He said, he looked at his guilt, and there was nothing there. It's part of that really looking at what is there. Mm-hmm. Embracing includes looking, but it also includes thinking about it.
We fear ghosts.
Pardon?
We fear ghosts. We fear things that aren't there. That, that maybe they're there. But we're afraid to find out. And we're afraid of those things.
That's that trust and faith, I think.
Yeah.